Supreme Court of the State of Nevada is now in session. The Honorable Associate Chief Justice Terry presiding.
Good morning, everybody. Please be seated. Let me announce first that our Chief Justice is handling a family emergency in Las Vegas. However, she's listening to the podcast and will conference with us on this case and the second case that we're going to hear this morning. So we will be conferencing with the full en banc contingency of this court. Our first case this morning is case number 56306, Davis versus U.S. Bank. Mr. Mauser for the appellant. Ms. Schuler, Hintz for the respondent. Mr. Mauser.
Morning, Your Honors. I'd like to divide my time with Robert R. Hager, who's associated in with me in this case, and I would like to save 5 minutes for rebuttal, so I'd only be arguing for 5 minutes. I'd like to address, to start our outset, before I suspect this argument may delve into larger issues, but I represent the Davises, and under the opinions of this court on in July, very well-written opinions, the certification for this assignment was not produced. And I realized that I added in belatedly the certification that refers to the note and the deed of trust, but what's missing from the record on appeal is any certification of the assignment, and the reason it's missing is it was never provided to us. So I think that's right at the outset. That should have precluded the certificate from issuing and also warned sanctions.
I have a question at the outset. In your reply brief on page 17, you state that respondents admit they failed to produce and or possess the original note at mediation. And later on that same page, you state that they, respondents admit, failed to satisfy the requirement that they produce the original or certified copy of the deed of trust, the mortgage note, and each assignment. I don't see those admissions, and your brief does not supply a citation to the record for them. In the record are the admissions you attribute to your opposing counsel.
I don't recall off the top of my head, Your Honor, and I'm not sure whether that statement, I don't remember, Judge. I do know that they did not have the certificate of the assignment. And I'm not sure whether that statement is there an error. I don't know off the top of my head. I can't recall whether they admitted that. I don't know, Judge. But I know that the certification assignment was not there at the mediation. I have a very clear recollection of that, and that's reflected by the record. And the assignment, which was produced, I didn't see this issue until 4 months ago, but it ties directly in to the challenge on the assignment that was made. These assignments, Your Honors, are every one of them under 111.210 are void on their face. The assignments do not express the consideration. What they do, and this is a perfect example, they state for value received. That is not an expression of consideration. That is a conclusion substituted in the stead of an expression of consideration. This court has only addressed it one time, and the opinion's not all that clear. Teddy Roosevelt was president. It was 1904. It's the White Sewing Machine Company versus Fowler case, 28 Nevada, page 94. And the court in that case, when you read the opinion closely, and then you read the subsequent opinion, the Oregon opinion that construes it, the failure to express the consideration can be saved. It has to be saved upon a well-grounded inference. The consideration has to be subject to fair implication. And what happens at these mediations is it's the antithesis of fair implication. The so-called lenders show up and they refuse to tell you what was paid. They refuse to produce the documents, which leaves you under 111.210, which is the 1861 statute before Nevada became a state, with a void assignment. It's void on its face, and it goes directly to the validity of the assignment because there's a number of cases.
Counsel, did you raise this argument below or with the original mediator? And if you didn't, did you preserve it for this court to hear it?
It was raised, albeit it could have been stated more clearly, Judge. It was raised in the sense that we did attack the assignment. I did cite Haltman's testimony, Mr. William C. Haltman, Treasurer, Secretary of MERS, who testifies, it's in the record at pages 123 to 124 of his April 7, 2010 deposition. Nothing is paid for these assignments. These assignments, Your Honors, they're using the non-judicial foreclosure proceeding. And they've got the analysis backwards. They say these issues aren't fit for adjudication by the district court. It's backwards. If they have problems with the chain of title, such as a void assignment, the correct way to proceed is with a judicial foreclosure.
Well, Mr. Mauser, I read the transcript and the pleadings below, and I didn't find in there that the basis for invalidity of the assignment rested on a failure of showing for value. The judge framed the issue in the district court as follows on page 217. He said, respondent challenged the MERS assignment, not its authenticity, just its validity, and this raises the Mitchell issue. That's what the judge framed the issue as in the district court out of the transcript. And throughout the argument, at least as near as I can tell, you talk about False Claims Act violations, anti-clogging doctrine, and other doctrines that might address or might apply, I suppose. But at the end of the day, your argument has to do with the validity of a MERS assignment.
Yes, sir. For which nothing is paid, and if it's not valid, it can't be authentic.
Is that the sole basis now in this argument for claiming that it's invalid?
Well,
failure to recite for value received? Because, for example, one of the things that would raise a question, I would think, looking at the assignment, would be who signed it and their authority to do so.
Exactly. And I
think that wasn't articulated as near anywhere in the transcript.
The question of who Marty Noriega is in the transcripts. It's in the description of she apparently is what's called a certifying officer. She probably works for a U.S. bank. MERS has no employees. A small nominal fee, they hand out these titles.
She worked for Litton.
She probably either works for Litton or U.S. bank. It's hard
but
to tell.
I guess my point, Mr. Mauser, is nothing in the transcript in front of the judge litigates this, her status, her authority. There's no testimony about that.
I believe
no request for a hearing about that I can see.
I believe I did submit the testimony of R.K. Arnold and William C. Holtman on those points, Judge. I think it's in the...
You mentioned that in the transcript, but you don't connect it to what this is about here.
Well, what this is about, Judge, is first of all, there's no certification of the assignment. That's number one. So the assignment cannot stand simply on that basis. But what we're asking here the court today is to even delve beyond that and remand it back for an evidentiary hearing so we can find out who Marty Noriega is, how much was paid, et cetera, et cetera. And I point out 111.210, I'm not necessarily relying on that to win. I think I've already got this in the bag in the sense that there is no certification, period. What I point out 111.210 so the court can look at it in perspective and the problems of allowing these MERS assignments to go forward. There, when you juxtapose these assignments to 111.210 and you see that the problem is apparent right on the face of the document, where usually we all blow by for value received because the consideration is obvious. But in this situation, the consideration is not obvious. To the contrary, we have an agreement between MERS and all of the banks, which specifically disavows possession of a beneficial interest by MERS, which in turn broaches an obvious question. Why would MERS be paid, in this case over $300,000, for an interest which the entity paying it knows MERS doesn't own? And on top of that, you have all this other testimony, and it's in that context the facial invalidity exists on the face of the document. And then, of course, we don't have the certification. Your Honor, Mr. Hager needs to have his say, and so I cede the rest of my time.
Good morning. I see that I don't have much time, so I'll be very brief. In answer to your question, Justice Hardesty, with regard to whether there are any other issues in connection with this MERS assignment, MERS, based on its own admissions and its membership agreements, can only act as agent for the principal. In this deed of trust, the principal is Onit Mortgage Solutions. Onit Mortgage Solutions went closed in December 2006 and went defunct in early 2007. Some 2 years after it ceased doing business and went out of existence and was dead, MERS purported to act at its direction, and MERS, based on the testimony of Holtman and Arnold, the chief legal officer Holtman and the CEO and president of MERS, Arnold, since its creation until after his deposition was taken, his sudden departure last year, admitted that MERS can only act at the specific direction of the principal. The principal in this case was gone some 2 years before that assignment, so that assignment is void. And that is a fact pattern that exists in this state in excess of 100,000 foreclosures so far. The majority of foreclosures on these subprime mortgages, the originator, the loan originator of these, is no longer in existence. So any assignment by MERS after the principal has become defunct is void. So we ask that the case be, that no certificate be issued and that this matter be remanded to the district court for an evidentiary hearing on these issues related to MERS's lack of authority to assign these deeds of trust, specifically for procedural genuflection to the Nevada State Nonjudicial Foreclosure Law. They're exploiting the judicial nonjudicial foreclosure law by creating fraudulent documents that purport to satisfy the requirements of that statute. Thank you.
Ms. Shuler-Hintz for the respondent.
Good morning, Justices. Kristen Shuler-Hintz on behalf of the respondents. What's at issue today is what occurred at a foreclosure mediation back in March 2010. At that time, Mr. Adams from my office appeared with the original promissory note in his hand, which is endorsed over to U.S. Bank as trustee. Your statement at that time states that from the documents presented, it appears that not all assignments were there.
Who assigned the endorsement of the note?
The endorsement, Your Honor, is by Michelle Doherty Funder. It was an endorsement in blank that was later turned over to U.S. Bank National Association as trustee for GSAMP Trust.
Well, who is she? What entity was she endorsing it on behalf?
Of Onit Mortgage.
They were the original payee of the promissory note.
Yes,
so she endorsed it in blank. It wasn't to a specific company, and U.S. Bank has possession of the original note.
Correct. And at this time, it is a closed endorsement to U.S. Bank. The endorsement was closed. An assignment of the deed of trust was recorded back in 2009, prior to a prior loan modification, which was between the parties who were in fact present at the mediation. The issue raised by Mr. Mousert at the mediation was that for some reason the assignment must be invalid because MERS is on the deed of trust. Courts across the country have repeatedly found that MERS is in fact appropriate entity to execute an assignment because that right is given to them in the deed of trust and agreed to by the borrowers at the time the deed of trust originates. Now, the finding made by the mediator wasn't that the assignment was uncertified. It was that there weren't all the assignments there. There was a hearing at the district court. Judge Flanagan heard evidence, took testimony, saw the documents, and said, I find no bad faith, the certificate should issue.
Well, he didn't take testimony, did he?
He took the statements of the parties. There's very little testimony that can be taken because the primary witness that is needed cannot be compelled to testify.
I understand that, but you're suggesting that there was an evidentiary hearing. There were oral arguments by counsel.
Yes, he took oral arguments by counsel. He took their, instead of testimony, oral arguments by counsel on this.
Okay.
Because the witness that we need is the mediator. We need to know what's going through the mediator's head. Mr. Mousert and Mr. Hager want to turn this into litigation. This is not litigation. This is a summary proceeding. The purpose of AB 149 is to directly address the foreclosure crisis, to help families stay in their homes, and as a forum to discuss alternatives to foreclosure.
The rules specifically authorize a de novo review of what transpired in the mediation. The mediator isn't called upon to testify, but the review of the documents and the parties who participated can testify. That's the nature of a de novo hearing.
That is correct.
It sounds like that's what counsel was requesting. I want to have an evidentiary hearing review what we presented and what the mediator considered.
And what the rules provide is that there's a hearing to the extent the court deems necessary. When we come in with the original promissory note, a modification offer, a prior modification offer, signed by the parties, with the parties who were present at the mediation, the elements of the mediation are satisfied, because what we're looking for is to see if there's an alternative to foreclosure.
Well, as I mentioned to Mr. Mauser earlier, the court framed the issue here as one of testing the validity of the assignment of the deed of trust, which is what Mr. Adams also argued here. And the concern, apparently, I know there was a lot of discussion about a whole bunch of other stuff, but as to the validity of the deed of trust, there seemed to be a question about whether the person who signed that assignment had the authority to do so.
I believe that argument is beyond the scope of a petition for judicial review, because the issue in a petition for judicial review is what occurred at the mediation. If we rescind the notice of default, there still has to be a mediation. If there is no foreclosure pending, there still has to be a mediation. If there is a loan modification after the parties elect to mediate, unless the borrowers specifically say, I don't want to go to mediation, we have to go to mediation. If there's a sale of the real property so that the borrowers are no longer the owners, we still have to go to mediation unless the borrowers respond to the mediator and say, I don't want to mediate.
In this case, you filed the petition with the district court challenging the mediators that you hadn't furnished all of the assignments necessary, right?
That's correct.
So it would have been appropriate, wouldn't it, for the court to consider testimony or hear evidence about the validity of the assignment that the mediator said wasn't furnished?
If the court deems it necessary. But the problem here is there are no more assignments. There's one. This is not a case where there were three assignments recorded or someone had seen an unrecorded assignment that was now not presented. This is a case where the only assignment that exists is the single one that was presented.
But there was an argument made that the assignment, the person who signed the assignment, lacked authority to do so, and there was some oddity associated with the time that the assignment was signed.
This is a MERS assignment.
Mm-hmm.
One of the important factors that is frequently left out of the discussion of MERS is MERS acts for the successors of the beneficiaries of the deed of trust or the note. If the note is transferred to a MERS member, then the deed of trust follows the note to the new MERS member, and then MERS is holding the deed of trust for the benefit of the
new
holder.
U.S. Bank isn't a MERS member, right?
I do not know. I believe it is, Your Honor.
I understood from the record that they weren't a MERS member.
I'm not aware of that.
Hmm.
If it was not a MERS member, then it would have had to be transferred out.
Right.
The record seems to reflect that the servicing agent was the member, not U.S. Bank.
And if the servicing agent is a member, then and the servicing agent is holding it for the benefit of the beneficiary of the deed of trust, they would be holding it.
So it would still be
part of MERS.
At the mediation, was there any proof of Marty Noriega signing as assistant vice president of an entity called MERS or Mortgage Electronic Registration Systems, Inc., that she really works for Mortgage Electronic Registration, Inc., and really is an officer? Wouldn't there have to be proof of that as part of the mediation?
Well, that's beyond the scope, because remember, we're not talking about litigation here. We're talking about mediation.
Well, the certification, ma'am, and I can tell you, I wrote the rules with a group of representative lenders, and the court approved them. I know what they say. You know, you're supposed to produce these documents and proof of ownership here, and a certificate. You can't just blow off this certificate. It means nothing. It means a lot. It means that these people that sign these documents have a right to sign them. They're not fictional people that are forging names on here. It's important to go through this to give credibility to the whole mediation process. And I'm concerned about that.
I think we're talking about a difference between the person who signed the certification of the note and deed of trust and the person who signed the assignment. Here we're talking about Mr. Mauser is arguing about the person who executed the assignment. That's a question of the validity of the chain of title or of the assignment. If there's an issue with the assignment, that does not necessarily mean that we don't have the standing to modify the loan, which is the purpose of the foreclosure mediation. If the issue has to do with the chain of title, whether we have standing to foreclose, that's a different issue that's appropriate for litigation. Here we came with the original promissory note and we said we have standing to modify your loan. We've modified your loan. As a matter of fact, we're here with an offer to modify your loan again. That's the inquiry for the foreclosure mediation, is what can we do to assist people? If you let someone go into the mediation, fold their arms and say, you don't have this, therefore, I don't have to accept anything you offer, you're frustrating the purpose of mediation, which is actually designed to help people. If you turn mediation and judicial review into expedited litigation, which is what Mr. Mauser is proposing, then you're frustrating the purposes of the mediation for those people who are there seeking a modification. This mediation occurred back in 3-9-2010. Since 3-9-2010, there's been no payments made on this property. This court's time is taken up with this issue, which is an appropriate issue for a trial, for a litigation, for a complaint, for the procedural due process that is afforded both parties when a complaint is filed, when discovery is taken, when evidence is accrued, without the expedited procedure that the judicial review process is designed to make a determination regarding good and bad faith.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You still have some time left. Ms. Schuler-Heinz, you still have some time left.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought I
was
that.
They ring the bell at about 5 minutes.
He sounded so final.
You still have about 4.5 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Well, if I could pick up where Justice Gibbons' finality left off. The Pacias case says very clearly that the statute requires the production of notes, deeds of trust, and all assignments, and that that is an independent, mandatory requirement that the legislature imposed as part of the AB 149 statutes. If the lender doesn't produce a valid assignment, then it, at least on the face, hasn't complied with the mandates of the statute as Pacias held, right?
Well, Your Honor, I think there's a difference between a valid assignment and an assignment. In Pacias, I think the issue there was the fact
that... Do you think that the legislature contemplated that the lender could present at the mediation invalid assignments and satisfy their expectations?
I think there's a difference between a facially invalid assignment, which was the issue in Pacias, and here where the question is a legal question. Here the specific question that Mr. Mauser is raising is, did MERS have the authority to execute the assignment?
But it seems like you're asking the court to conclude or make an exception that as long as the lender presents any assignment, regardless of whether it's valid, that satisfies the mandate of the statute?
Well, Your Honor, if there's only one assignment, and whether it's valid or invalid, it may affect our right to foreclose. If Mr. Mauser's arguments are accepted, it may affect our right to foreclose, but does it affect our ability to modify the loan, which is the goal of the program? It does not. This is a facially valid assignment. It's a recorded document. It put them on record notice. In fact, it's a little bit better than a facially valid assignment because the Davises in this case already modified their loan with the parties who have the assignment. We have the original note endorsed to the same party it's assigned to. All of those protections are there. This is not a chain of title inquiry. Chain of title inquiries should be reserved to the district court and a fully litigated process with all of the ability to answer the process with due process, with service of process, with evidence, with discovery. Here the issue is, can we modify the loan? Are we trying to modify the loan? I don't think that bad faith originates just from not producing the documents, because there are instances where...
Macias said that bad faith isn't even part of the question. Macias holds that if you fail to produce the requisite documents, that fact, standing alone, is sufficient basis for the imposition of sanctions, does it not?
It does, Your Honor, but and fortunately, I have to disagree with this court, because there can be instances when the failure to produce the documents is something that's beyond the control of the parties. If the loan is service released, if the note was there at the time the foreclosure was started, but when you go around to certifying it, the note is no longer there. There's no.
But there are remedies under the Uniform Commercial Code to rectify those difficulties. That was recognized in Leyva.
Yes, Your Honor, but there may not be sufficient time in order to go and seek those remedies. So while I'm here at I have an election to mediate, I get a notice to go to the mediation, I discover now my note is missing. I have to attend the mediation.
Didn't the legislature say you shouldn't start the foreclosure in the first place if you don't have the documents?
Well, what if the documents were there, but then they got lost? These things do happen.
True.
So it's not always bad faith not to produce the documents. There can be reasonable explanations not to produce the documents.
But in this case, you did produce the assignment, and the statute doesn't say a certified assignment. It says a certified deed of trust, the original note, and an assignment.
Yes,
so certified only modifies deed of trust. Did you produce a certified copy of the deed of trust, the note, and the assignment at the mediation, and does the record support that?
Yes, it does. As a matter of fact, the specific finding is that not all assignments that were produced, not that the assignment was not produced.
And so the omissions attributed to you in the reply brief by Mr. Mauser that I addressed to him at the outset of his remarks?
Absolutely, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Mauser, do you have 4 minutes and 22 seconds for rebuttal?
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, that appears to be a mistake. I think what it should have read, and I apologize to the court, and I'm certainly not going to stand by and here and tell the court that they didn't produce the certificate copy of the note. That's a mistake. What it should have said is the certification of assignment.
Okay, and where do you get certification as a modifier on assignment in either NRS 107-0864 or the foreclosure mediation rules?
I believe it's in the foreclosure mediation rules, Your Honor. They have to produce certifications of the assignments.
Can you direct me to the rule that says that?
I believe at the time of this mediation it was Rule 5.8.
Go ahead and continue, Mr. Mauser.
Your Honor, the purpose of the mediation is found in Rule 1.2, as this court knows, Rule 1, parenthesis 2, to exchange information to avoid foreclosure. The premise that they're here to help, I dispute that. The parameters, what happened here is that the borrowers came in willing to negotiate to share the pain. You've got a note here over $360,000, I believe, with interest and arrearages and whatnot in the house. I think came in at something like $175,000. So you have this vast diminution in value.
Well, actually, there was an initial modification. Didn't the bank come in and modify The payment schedule, they went from $2,400 a month and dropped that to, I believe, $1,700 a month.
There's no principal reduction, Your Honor.
No. But they came in and lowered the payment from $2,400 to $1,700, and then there was subsequent default. Is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor. They were just about a year apart.
And then they offered another modification of the payment during the mediation as well. Isn't that correct?
Right, but none of those offers ever involved a principal reduction, and what with this vast diminution in value, what that translates into at the end of the day is a mandatory rental agreement with debt. The primary attribute of ownership, financial equity in the house, will not exist for my clients for 15 years or so. And they're of an age where they can't, they weren't willing to do that, Judge. So my point is, and I'm not necessarily saying they have to offer a principal reduction. I want the court to see this in context of my clients willing to negotiate some principal reduction, willing to share the pain. That's throughout these communities, throughout our entire state. And the bank adopts the position, we're not going to discuss principal reduction. That's not on the table. Now, if you have an intelligent response from borrowers at that point, then home retention's out because it's insane economically to pay $360,000 for a $175,000 house. Now you're talking exit strategies. They're shunted into the exit strategy, and it's in that context that borrowers have a right to know whether they're going to be exposed to a deficiency judgment. They have the right to know whether that chain of title is there. The alternative for the bank, if you're going to come in and use a procedure, a non-judicial foreclosure proceeding, which has as its assumption there's nothing really at issue, there's nothing to talk about here, then you have to have all your ducks in a row. You have to have all your documents. If you don't have all your documents, the bank's solution at that point is to bring a judicial foreclosure action. They have an alternative, but they want to come in and they want to use the non-judicial foreclosure proceeding, and they want to use facially invalid documents without the requisite certification, and they want all the benefits of the non-judicial foreclosure proceeding without talking, and then they want to say, oh, no, the validity of the documents is beyond the scope. It's not beyond the scope. Inherent in the use of that procedure is the contention there's nothing at issue. We have all our documents. And so it's direct the court. The court is absolutely correct. The requirement of production of assignments, obviously, it hardly needs to be said, but I guess it does here. The intrinsic in that requirement is the requirement you produce only valid assignments. Otherwise, you're perpetrating a fraud. And so I think it is. And so we would ask, Your Honors, that this be remanded back for an evidentiary hearing so the district court can pull that curtain aside and find out who these people are and whether anything was paid for this assignment.
Thank you. Any further questions from the en banc court? Court thanks all three attorneys for their presentations today. Thank you, and this matter will stand submitted.